So let me get this straight. One of the very first places that Jesus is rejected out of hand is the place where they know him best, his hometown. He goes there, and even though he's preaching and he's doing wonderful things, the people he grew up around, the people who knew his people, won't accept it. They say, where's he get this stuff? What kind of wisdom is this he's preaching? Show me some deeds of power that he's doing. Isn't this the same kid who was the son of the tectone, the construction worker? Aren't those his brothers and sisters? We know them. No construction worker is supposed to become a rabbi. No construction worker is supposed to be up there preaching to us. Nobody who comes from his station in life should be up in a position higher than the one he deserves. In my mother's terminology, Jesus had gotten above his raising. In other places, the phrase would be, he didn't know his place. Because you see, in the ancient world, you were born into a certain social strata, and to step into a higher place didn't bring honor to you, basically. It brought dishonor to your whole family. They were offended by him. The people in his hometown, the people who knew his family and his background, were offended by the very fact that he would stand up in front of them and preach. And isn't it interesting that Mark says, because of that, he could do no deeds of power. Oh yeah, he healed a few people along the periphery of things. He could do no deeds of power. And he was amazed at their unbelief. Another word for that would be prejudice. He was amazed at their prejudice. They had prejudged him. They thought they knew who he was because they knew who his people were. I grew up with that too. Some of you did too. If I know who your people are, I have a pretty good idea about who you are. But no, you don't really. That's prejudice. And because of their unwillingness to step out of their prejudgment of who Jesus was, they were offended by what he said and what he did. And he wasn't able to do his full ministry because of that. And so he simply observes what's going on. A prophet may have honor elsewhere, but a prophet doesn't have honor in his own hometown, among his own kin, in his own house. The people who knew him best showed him no honor. Now, Jesus aligned himself with the prophets very clearly. There were two fairly distinct lines within his time. One was the priestly caste, the other were the prophets, and he aligned himself with the prophets very clearly. And other places that would be accepted, but not at home, not where they knew him best. You know, throughout history, we've had folks who experienced a very similar kind of process in their lives. I think of Joan of Arc, caught up in the war between England and France. A girl, just a girl, basically, who heard voices, who went out into the field, and to silence her, they martyred her. I should say we martyred her, because it was Christians who did it. And then when she had another bigger following after being martyred, we decided we could neutralize her effect in a different way. We made her a saint. And that's what we do, isn't it? If death won't neutralize your influence, we'll just make you a saint and people will worship you, but they won't follow your example. Think of Abraham Lincoln. someone who was literally hated and reviled by many in his own time. And quite frankly, I grew up among folks who hated and reviled him still. And though I look old, it wasn't that long ago. A man who did in the best way he could what he thought was right, leading a country through a rebellion and a civil war, and finally being assassinated. And today, he's celebrated as one of the great presidents. Not in his own time. Not in his own time. Think of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, traveling through the country, preaching nonviolence, preaching respect and love between the races when there was little respect or love shown to him. The hatred that he experienced from people. I remember where I was the day I heard that he had been assassinated, and I remember that there were celebrations in my state and in other places by those people who despised him. As J. Edgar Hoover called him, the most dangerous Negro in America. Today, even the people who would have disagreed with him quote him favorably. You see, if killing someone can't absolutely neutralize their influence, then we lift them up to a kind of sainthood where we can worship them but not follow their example. Because you see, again and again and again, a prophet has no honor in their own country, in their own household, among their own kin. But occasionally, there are exceptions. And within a lifetime, a person can go through a period of struggle and even being reviled, and if they can live long enough, come to know some respect, even among their own kin. Let me tell you a story about a man named Jesse Lee. He was born in 1758 in Virginia to an Anglican family, a prosperous family. Somehow they fell in with the common folk because they went to a Methodist meeting. And they got a different kind of religion than they had ever experienced before. And when he was a teenager, his entire family became part of the Methodist movement in this country, which wasn't even a country then. When the Revolution came, Methodists were faced with something of a quandary for several reasons. A number of Methodists were pacifists, the early Methodists. It was not required, but a number of them were. One of the great preachers, one of the famous preachers of that time, Freeborn Garrison, was an outspoken pacifist. He was beaten, jailed, reviled for his stand. The Methodists were mistrusted, in part because of the number who did take a pacifist stand, and in part because, after all, their religion had come over from England. And Mr. Wesley didn't make it any better. He didn't help matters, because, you see, he opposed the rebellion against the king. He opposed everything that had to do with rebellion against the king, and even said, someone who cannot love the king cannot love the church. Pretty strong words. So Methodists were labeled as Tories, as British sympathizers, especially those who wouldn't fight. Jesse Lee was one of those. He said, I can't kill another person. So they threw him into the stockade, into jail. And when he was in jail, he decided that that shouldn't stop him from celebrating God's presence at all times and in all places, which I guess he got from the Bible. So he led the prisoners in singing hymns. And this bothered the jailer and those who had him in jail so much that they finally said, okay, if we don't ask you to kill people, will you do something else? He said, sure. So he drove a wagon. Several times his commander asked if he would carry a weapon, if he would be willing to kill. He said, no. But he would drive the wagon. Jesse Lee, as a Methodist and as a pacifist, was not highly thought of by his neighbors. But along the way, after this country had become a country, when Mr. Wesley decided that he would violate the discipline of his own national church and ordain people to come and serve sacraments in the New World, because after all, the Anglican priests, most of them, if not all, had gone to Canada or back to England. Many Methodists had. And so the people had a pastoral need and a pastoral concern. And while he had no right or permission to do so, he ordained persons to come over and serve the sacraments and superintend the societies. You know some of those names, Asbury, Coke. Mr. Asbury ordained Jesse Lee a deacon in 1790 and an elder in 1791. He sent him to New England as a missionary. Now, you may have thought there were Christians in New England, but they were Calvinists. They were Puritans. And were not used to the kind of free grace that this Arminian preacher, this Methodist preacher, had to offer. And so he was sent literally as a missionary to New England. He was very successful. He came very close to being elected bishop. Different sources say different things about how close he came. Some say one vote, some say two, some say four, but they all agree on the reason he was not elected bishop. He was too jovial. Apparently, to be a bishop, you couldn't have a sense of humor. He did, however, become a general superintendent of the work. And in his later years, he was elected to be the chaplain of the United States Congress. Yes, this pacifist was elected to be the chaplain of the United States Congress, not once, but several times. When he finished that, he became chaplain of the Senate. And if anyone knows the name of Jesse Lee, which most folks don't, it's because he is the first church historian of the Methodist movement on this continent. He wrote a little short history of the Methodists in America and got started this project of remembering who we are by recording the stories of the people who first came, who established the societies, and continued the work along the years. You know, the interesting thing is, while Jesse Lee was reviled by his neighbors for being a pacifist and suspected by his neighbors for being a Methodist, of having British sympathies, when he became chaplain to the Congress and the Senate, he began to be reviled by the Methodists. Because, after all, we were a church of the common folk. And once again, like Jesus, he had gotten above his raising. The people called Methodists did not see the congressional representatives and senators as seeing themselves as common folk. Now, that was then, of course, not now. They saw themselves as being above the rest of us. And by his simple association with them, by his willingness to be a chaplain to them, Jesse Lee was once again reviled for his work. But we come here today to celebrate a prophet who has no honor in his own country, don't we? Had no honor then. And today, sometimes when Jesus leads us to take stands that are different from the stands of our neighbors around us, or even different from the stands of our own church, don't expect any honor. We can expect to be reviled, following the example of the one who not only suffered that being reviled, but loved those who reviled him, who overcame death, speaking words of forgiveness even to those who put him to death, and who lives in and among us this very day. It doesn't matter that there's no honor as long as we're doing the thing that Jesus calls us to do. We don't need to expect it, and it has no value, such honor. The thing that had value for Joan of Arc, for Abraham Lincoln, for the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, for Jesse Lee, and for Jesus, was to do the thing that God had given them to do. May we have the strength and courage to do the same. Amen.